Good evening. I'd like to welcome you to the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session, September 21st, 2022. We'll do roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. All council members are present. Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There will be a neighborhood meeting for the Avia at Rancho Vistoso West on September 22nd at 6 p.m. in the council chambers and also via Zoom. And then the September 27th Board of Adjustment meeting has been canceled. There will be another neighborhood meeting for the general plan amendment, rezoning, and site plan in Stone Canyon scheduled for September 29th at 6 p.m. here in the council chambers and also via Zoom. And then another neighborhood meeting for a general plan amendment and rezoning Moore Loop Rancho Vistoso area on October 3rd at 6 p.m. in the council chambers and via Zoom. And then the next Planning and Zoning Commission meeting will be held October 4th at 6 p.m. here in the council chambers. And then the next town council regular session is scheduled for October 5th at 6 p.m. again here in the council chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Tonight, Councilmember Jones Ivy will recognize Grayson Golder, a fifth grader at Painted Sky Elementary.
Out of all my council duties, this is the one that I most enjoy. Recognizing our young people and their contribution to our community and society is always, always a wonderful thing. So tonight, I have the honor of introducing to you Grayson Golder. Grayson is a fifth grader at Painted Sky Elementary School. And for being such a young guy, Grayson has already left a lasting impression on his Painted Sky community by always being someone both staff and students can count on. As a model student, he goes above and beyond to promote kindness while staying humble. Grayson is kind-hearted, patient with his peers, hardworking, and engaged in his learning, which makes him a model for every student at Painted Sky. As a leader on campus, this young man enjoys being an ambassador for the school, welcoming new students. He serves in the National Elementary Honor Society, where he has fundraised and collected shoes for the nonprofit Kick for Kids. He has also baked cookies and dropped them off at our local fire stations to show his support to our first responders. In addition to his in-school achievements, Grayson is part of the Oro Valley Baseball League, takes weekly guitar lessons, and loves any moment he can find to be on his dirt bike or a wakeboard. Grayson, we're very proud this evening to honor you and tell you that you are our spotlight on youth, and we can't wait to see what else is in your future that you're going to achieve. Now, enlighten me. What is a wakeboard?
It's a thing it's kind of like surf, snowboarding or skateboarding, but on water behind a boat.
Oh, okay. Something you won't find me on. Okay, we're going to get a picture, and I want to present this to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Going on the announcements tomorrow, Grace.
Congratulations, Grayson, and we appreciate your family that's here this evening, and also representatives from the school that are here as well, Principal Papa John and all his teachers. Okay, not just nice. Thank you. Councilmember Green will give a report.
In keeping with Joyce's report on youth, we had the pleasure of going to the Lehman School last week. The mayor and I, and we were accompanied by the fire department and the police department, who parked their cars and trucks with lights on, and the children came out to inspect the vehicles, and it was quite an event, something pretty special. Those kids are so well behaved, but it was a really beautiful event, and it started with this helicopter coming down. So we're very proud of them, very proud of what the Lehman School has done. The second thing I wanted to mention is these are the community courts. They're being painted, and will be finished, I think, very, very soon. They're doing a good job with it. We're hoping that mid-October or so we'll be playing tennis there as well as pickleball. So the contractors are doing a good job. They're working hard, and they're doing an excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Green. Are there other council reports this evening? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go to the town manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. First, on behalf of the leadership team, I would like to once again, for the benefit of our community, extend our congratulations to Chief Riley and the men and women of the Oro Valley Police Department on their recent Arizona Law Enforcement Accreditation Program Award. This is a big deal. This was a two-year process with lots and lots of hard work by the department. And according to the program's website, OVPD now joins just 45 other policing agencies across the state of Arizona in this prestigious recognition that will not only benefit the department, but our entire community. So I think that deserves a round of applause, don't you? And Mayor, members of council, hot off the press, I haven't even been able to tell you all, but I'm really excited to let you all know and our community know that just today the Pima Association of Governments announced that the town of Oro Valley has been awarded $3.7 million for a multi-use path on Naranja Drive from First Avenue all the way to La Cañada Drive. So this is one of only three projects that was awarded in our region for this competitive process. And I want to recognize the director, Paul Kiesler, and engineering manager, Jose Rodriguez, in Public Works for quickly responding to a request by PAG to submit a grant. It was a very fast turnaround for this. This is a really important project. Those of you who have driven on Naranja know we have been waiting for the resources for that multi-use path. And Paul and Jose and his entire team are always on the lookout for grants. He couldn't be with us this evening, but we're excited, we're appreciative, and we can all look forward to seeing this path in the near future. Well, in the future. I don't know how near. We'll see, right? They are federal funds. We have to do environmentals. There's a lot of things, but be patient. We got the money. We're going to move forward. And then finally, I'd like to publicly congratulate Deputy Town Manager Chris Cornelison, Communications and Marketing Administrator Misty Nowak and our contractor, our partner, the Gordley Group, for the recent national award by the City-County Communications Association. This is the national organization, and they received an award for their outstanding work on OV Safe Steps. The collateral materials and the communication strategy developed for this program were an essential part of its success, and we are certainly very proud to get this prestigious recognition among programs and materials submitted from cities and counties across the entire United States. So congratulations to them, and another feather in our cap. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We appreciate all that good news, Ms. Jacobs. We'll go to call. Well, the agenda will remain as posted. We'll go to call to audience next. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. First speaker is Vicki Terrace, and if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley.
Hi, my name is Vicki Terrace, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. I live directly across the street to the west from the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene, and I'm here to speak against the rezone request by the church. Some points to ponder. When we built our home in Oro Valley 29 years ago, we nor anyone else envisioned a sports complex larger than Wrigley Field would be positioned on our front doorstep. The unchecked growth of an inappropriately sized facility that does not benefit the community as a whole and will irreparably alter the structure of our neighborhood should not even be seriously considered at the proposed location. The most vocal proponents, including church staff and congregants, do not live in the neighborhood. Those who are paid to promote it and who tout the benefits to non-Oro Valley youth will not now or ever be financially and emotionally impacted by decimating a residential neighborhood. The partnering with Upward Sports speaks clearly to those whose interest is best served here, and it's obviously not the neighbors. If it is such a good idea, why are the proponents not clamoring it to adjoin their property? That single simple thought speaks volumes. When it comes time to consider this proposal, we respectfully request the property remain zoned residential and that the initiative to rezone it to a pad be denied. Thank you.
Next speaker is Anthony Ferreira, and I apologize if I've mispronounced your name.
No, you did fine. My name is Anthony Ferreira. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I, too, want to just hope that you do not rule in favor of the potential rezone of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. They've revised some of the documents. I've scanned them. But this, you know, the lights are still on there, 70 feet high. Again, if you remember what I've said before, as high as the Disneyland castle right next to some of our neighbors, which would just do permanent and irreparable harm to the neighborhood. So thank you.
Karen Steinbrunn.
Mayor Winfield, council members, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Karen Steinbrunn. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I'm a native Arizonan, and I've lived in Pima County 50 years. I haven't been in Oro Valley but the last 11 years, and I'm here to oppose the planned area development by the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. Well, what drew me here to Oro Valley was this gorgeous agricultural residential area. It's really a gem, the Linda Vista Citrus Tracts. Also, what drew me was the fact that this area was hard zoned. It's residential agricultural hard zoning. I think it's R133. And that was important to me to protect my enjoyment and use of my property. We have horses, we have some agricultural growing, and we have a few chickens. So that was very important, and as well as protecting the value of my property in this area. But now it's being threatened by this request for developing residential property into a large sports complex, classrooms, and an amphitheater. Now, some of the things have already been stated in past meetings: the increase in noise, in traffic, light pollution, goes on and on. Although the church wants this development, I think it's without regard to the neighbors whose lifestyle is in this agricultural community. There is the Cray Park. There is Naranja Park, which the town has built additional soccer fields at and pickleball fields. There's the River Park on Lambert Lane. There's a variety of sports locations near the church. So why is an additional sports complex needed in the town of Oro Valley? I believe it's unnecessary to add this to the neighborhood. And it seems it's more of a revenue stream rather than if it is a revenue stream, and I wonder about that, should it be more located in a commercial area, not surrounded by residences on three sides? Thank you.
Tim Fagan.
Members of the council, you just heard my name. I have been a resident of Oro Valley for 35 years. My wife and I built our current home at 9510 Calle Buena Vista in 1991. We were attracted by the rural setting, by the views of the Catalinas, by the light traffic, and the zoning for farms and ranches. I had horses there for 25 years. I'd had a total of four generations, and I only stopped when the last one died. This is still an equestrian area. People ride along the roads. They drive buggies. You know that by walking along the roads and seeing the tracks or seeing them. After we built our home, very little changed for many years. The traffic gradually increased a little, but there was a noticeable increase after the building of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene and their proposal now for marked expansion with the football fields, the tall buildings, the marked increase in traffic, noise, strain on the electrical grid. We have outings. They could have as many as 20 AC units on that basketball court. There'll be increased runoff down McCormick Wash, which already has significant erosion and flooding downstream. So there's plenty of facilities in Oro Valley, plenty of places where things could be built for youth sports. And the adverse consequences and the expense of this expansion are far outweighed by the claim benefits. So I believe, my wife and I, that the council should not approve the proposed zoning changes. Thank you.
Tim Terrace.
Evening. My name, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, Council and Town Staff. My name is Tim Terrace. I live across the street from the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene, and I'm speaking tonight against the OVCN request for rezone to a PAD. I've entitled the following, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? The legal team for OVCN mentions Upward Sports in their latest submission to the town. It is unlikely that OVCN could finance a project of this magnitude without Upward Sports. Upward Sports is an international multi-million dollar operation to blend sports with religion and partners with churches like OVCN to do so. They are a 501c3 nonprofit that hugely benefits financially from their programs. The question is, why are they here? Several years of tax returns of Upward Sports are available online, or I can provide them on request. These returns paint a picture of their business model. The churches are used as a conduit for the plan, and in a tax-timely fashion, the properties are sold. Their main facility in Spartanburg, South Carolina, is now for sale. All are individual pieces to all comers. This is the same sports complex they presented as being needed to continue their mission. If it's closing, what happened to the youth and the ministry? The church deliberately delayed town meetings and town council considerations until after the recent election in hopes of a church member candidates being elected and thus providing favorable counsel for their initiative.
Mr. Terrace, we've had, I think we'll... Okay.
This did not happen. Anyone interested or affected should take a hard look at Upward Sports. Many people are making a great deal of money from this real estate venture in disguise. The effort by OVCN to minister to youth through sports is overshadowed by their association with Upward Sports and what they bring to the community. It's the elephant in the room. And as Ronald Reagan used to say, trust but verify. Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else here this evening that would like to speak to call to audience? If there is, this is your opportunity to do so. You'd need to fill out a blue card. That concludes the call to audience. We'll go to the presentations part of our meeting this evening. Mr. Standish, presentation one.
Proclamation, Diaper Need Awareness Week.
Okay, it's my pleasure to read the following proclamation this evening. Whereas diaper need, the condition of not having a sufficient supply of clean diapers to ensure that infants and toddlers are clean, healthy, and dry, can adversely affect the health and well-being of babies, toddlers, and their families. And national surveys and research studies report that 1 in 3 families struggles with diaper need, and 48% of families delay changing a diaper to extend their supply. And whereas children go through 6 to 12 diapers each day during the 2 to 3 years they wear diapers, and purchasing enough diapers to keep a baby or toddler clean, dry, and healthy can consume 14% of a low-wage family's post-tax income, making it difficult to obtain a sufficient supply. And the people of Oro Valley recognize that diaper need is a public health issue, and addressing diaper need can lead to economic opportunity for the state's families and communities and improved health for children, thus ensuring all children and families have access to the basic necessities required to thrive and reach their full potential. And whereas while experiencing double, triple, or greater increase in demand for diapers due to the pandemic and economic downturn, diaper banks did everything in their ability to increase diaper distributions and support children and families in need of immediate assistance. Now, therefore, I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of Oro Valley, do hereby proclaim the week of September 24th through October 2nd, 2022, as Diaper Need Awareness Week in the town of Oro Valley, and would like to thank all the diaper banks, their staff, volunteers, donors for their courageous service during the crisis, and encourage the residents of Oro Valley to donate generously to diaper banks, diaper drives, and those organizations that collect and distribute diapers to those struggling with diaper need so that Oro Valley's children and families can thrive and reach their full potential. And it just so happens about 24 hours ago, I was changing the diaper of one of my grandchildren. let's see. I'd like to invite Dr. Shannon Roberts, CEO of the Diaper Bank of Southern Arizona, to accept the proclamation.
Do you have enough hands?
So maybe more important than the proclamation is a box of diapers. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council member, and staff. I want to take the time to say thank you for your continued support. It means a lot to us for you all to acknowledge the critical need within our community throughout Southern Arizona. And without the Oro Valley community, we would really be suffering. So I thank you. Thank you, thank you. And I ask that you continue to support our great work and the mission and help us to be more productive citizens to the town of Oro Valley. Thank you.
Mr. Standish, presentation two.
Recognition of Golden Ranch Fire Chief Randy Carr on his induction into the Arizona Fire Service Hall of Fame.
Well, we're really happy to have Chief Carr here with us this evening. Chief, I'm going to present some items here and then invite you to come up to receive the certificate. But thank you for joining us tonight. You know, it's an honor for all of the town council to recognize Golden Ranch Fire Chief Randy Carr this evening for not one, but two prestigious awards. For those of you who didn't know, Chief Carr has been a fire chief at Golden Ranch since 2010, and his career in fire departments goes back to 1981. The first award, which he received in July at the Arizona Fire Chiefs and Arizona Fire Districts Association Leadership Conference, is the 2022 Weber Lifetime Achievement Award. This award recognizes fire service professionals who've dedicated their life's work to the Arizona Fire Service. The second award took place just last week. Chief was inducted into the Arizona Fire Service Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame recognizes individuals who've made a significant positive contribution to their community and Arizona's fire service. As an inductee, Chief's name will be added to the permanent Hall of Fame display located at the Hall of Fame Fire Museum in Phoenix. Chief, congratulations on these well-deserved honors, and thank you for your service to the town of Oro Valley. Chief, we certainly, again, want to recognize you for these wonderful accomplishments and just for the good man, husband, and father that you are.
So, thank you so much, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'll take a photo and then give you a minute to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Mr. Mayor, members of council, first, thank you very much for this honor. I'm humbled, to say the least. It was humbling to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Clearly, it's humbling to, you know, just be recognized by the town. I especially enjoy the part about the diapers because, you know, after 6 months down the road here, you know, when in my retirement, I might need some. So, you'll recall that I'm a hometown boy. I graduated from Canyon Del Oro High School. I won't say the year. But I will tell you that I'm humbled to be able to serve this community and, you know, to see my chairperson's grandson receive a recognition this evening. I mean, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, that was just beautiful. You know, he's such a wonderful young man. But it has been my honor and my pleasure to serve the town, and I look forward to still being engaged after my retirement, and I want to recognize one of our board members, Sandy Outlaw, who is an Oro Valley resident, who's here tonight as well. But thank you for recognizing this, and it's truly been a pleasure and an honor to serve you. Thank you very much.
Ms. Jacobs?
Mr. Mayor, just real quickly, as Chief Carr is walking back, on behalf of the leadership team, Randy, it's a pleasure to have you. As you know, Golden Ranch serves as our fire department, so Randy's part of our leadership team. He's our fire chief, and he joins us and participates with us, and we couldn't be more proud of you as well. So, Chief, congratulations.
Mr. Standish, presentation three.
Presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 21-22 financial update through June 2022.
So our finance and budget administrator, Wendy Gomez, will present this item. Welcome, Ms. Gomez.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Council. Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'm pleased to be presenting our financial update for the fiscal year 21-22. So we've wrapped things up on a strong note. Our revenues significantly outperformed budget expectations. We saw some savings on the expenditure side as well. So let's go ahead and jump right in. And we'll start with the general fund on the revenue side. Our local sales tax, we're seeing strong performance throughout the year. We finished about 31% over budget. Actuals in total were about $27.8 million. We saw higher than expected growth really across all of our categories, strong recovery in some of those areas that have been impacted by COVID, as well, undoubtedly, inflation has been playing a part in our collections too. State shared revenues, actuals were $15.3 million, or about $1.6 million over budget. We did have our new smart and safe funds that we received this year. Those totaled about $235,000. But we also saw outperformance with state shared sales taxes. Those came in about $230,000 over budget, as well as our urban revenue sharing or income tax that came in about $167,000 over budget. In charges for services, we've been talking about this throughout the year. We've seen very strong recreation revenue coming in, just recovery from the pandemic, much higher than expected. Our actuals came in total for the category, about 11% over budget. And just for reference on the recreation revenues in particular, those in total came in about $340,000 over budget. So that was user fees at the Aquatic Center and our recreation programs, as well as field rentals. Licenses and permits, we saw strong activity on both the commercial and residential side. Actuals in total were about $2.4 million, which was about 29% over budget. Even though we did not quite hit our budgeted single-family residential permits, which were 225, we hit 198 were the actuals issued. We still had residential revenue come in over budget just because of higher construction valuations, more custom homes, and that sort of drove the revenues up, but strong commercial activity as well. Our grant revenues, the bulk of those actuals of $6 million or 99% of budget is obviously our ARPA funds. That was $5.6 million for fiscal year 21-22. So we've now booked our full $10 million lost revenue piece, the kind of unfenced portion of the ARPA funds. Again, it was $5.6 million that we received or recognized in fiscal year 21-22. And then it was $4.4 million last year in fiscal year 2021. And then all other, that includes our other intergovernmental revenues, our interest income, and miscellaneous revenues. Those totals came in about $1.3 million, or about 69% of budget, under budget by about $585,000 in total. And that's due to an unrecognized or unrealized gain or loss that we had on our investments at the end of the year. So we are required to, at the end of every fiscal year, we are required to look at the fair value of our investments and mark them accordingly. That loss with the current market was not completely unexpected, but just for reference, in the general fund, that amount was about $950,000. So unrecognized, that's only in situations where the investments would be sold before maturity, but we do still have to recognize that on our financials. In total, general fund revenues came in about $55.5 million, or about 18% over budget. So that in total is about $8.4 million for the fiscal year. Moving on to our expenditures for the general fund, personnel came in about $30 million, about 2.5% budget savings there, or about $760,000. That was just due to personnel vacancies that we saw across departments throughout the year. On the operations and maintenance side, actuals were $21.5 million, or about 2% under budget in total, or $460,000. We saw savings primarily in building repair and maintenance, some capacity that we had placed in for ARPA projects where we either saw significant savings or ended up not utilizing the funding for that purpose. But also insurance, we saw some savings, and outside professional services and funding of outside sources as well. Capital, the actuals were about $611,000, or about 56% of budget. Obviously, the large variance you see there are the westward look improvements, the roadway work, and the landscape maintenance. That project has been rolled over to the current fiscal year. And then transfers out, we've mentioned these previously, and we've mentioned this category previously. We did not have a principal payment last fiscal year for our new pension obligation bonds. So that's the variance you see there of about $1.1 million. In total, for the general fund, expenditures were at $58.4 million, or 95.3% of budget. So under budget in total by about $2.9 million, or 4.7%. Looking at the chart for the general fund, revenues first, you see our current year, $55.5 million, compared to the prior year, $53.6 million. That doesn't look super exciting, but we want to keep in mind that the prior year did include the ARPA amount as well as our CARES dollars, too. So the CARES funding was about $5.3 million. So that just gives that some perspective. The expenditures, $58.4 million for fiscal year 21-22 compared to $42.1 million the prior year. As a reminder, we did have our $10 million PSPRS payment reflected in the actuals there, but also we had a higher transfer to capital this year. So that was up about $4 million year over year. We did budget to use fund balance in the general fund of about $14.2 million. With our revenues having exceeded budget as well as some expenditure savings, we are estimating that we're going to use about $2.9 million. That would bring us to an ending fund balance of $29.5 million, which equates to 54.7% of budgeted expenditures, and that exceeds Council's 25% policy by about $16 million. Moving on to the Highway Fund revenues, license and permits. We saw some higher than expected right-of-way and road permit activity that is reflected in the actuals you see there of about $29,000. Our HERF revenues, the state shared revenues, performed well for the fiscal year. We saw about 7% growth year over year. Those came in about 10% over budget, which equates to about $365,000. And then our all other, that negative amount you see there at the year end is due to the fair market valuation of our investments that I had mentioned earlier with the general fund. Obviously, we have cash across our funds, the investment funds, and so that loss you will see spread out and posted to all of our funds. In total, the Highway Fund revenues came in just under $4 million. Over budget by about 9.6%, or $350,000. Expenditures for the Highway Fund, personnel came in about 3% under budget. We just saw some savings throughout the year due to positions that had opened up and been refilled, as well as some underutilized overtime budget in that fund. Operations and maintenance in the Highway Fund is usually pretty tight. We don't usually see a whole lot of variance there at year end, but we did see some slight savings, about 2% under budget, due to some line items for transportation engineering. Capital came in as expected. That is our payment preservation program, as well as the Lambert Lane CIP overlay project. Highway Fund expenditures in total were about $4,035,000, or 98.7% of budget, so just a little bit of savings there, about $55,000, or 1.3%. Here's the chart for the Highway Fund. You can see our revenue growth, $4 million compared to $3.8 million in the prior year. Expenditures of $4 million compared to $3.4 million last year. That's really entirely that Lambert Lane overlay project. That was about a $600,000 project. In total, we had planned to use fund balance in the Highway Fund of about $443,000. We're now estimating, due to those additional HERF revenues, that we're only going to use about $36,000, and that would bring us to an ending fund balance of about $1.2 million. Moving on to the Community Center Fund side of things, the revenues finished strong in this fund. Our contracted operating revenues came in at a little over $4.7 million, so exceeded budget by 30.5%, or $1.1 million. All their revenue sources were significantly higher than expected, their golf revenues, but also their member dues, and they saw a strong performance in food and beverage, and even their merchandise sales, too. Town operating revenues also did very well for the fiscal year, came in about $1.2 million compared to our budget of $700,000. We saw significant recovery in those recreation programs with the camps held there and all the different programming, people really just getting back to doing things and getting out there after the pandemic. But member dues also did well and outperformed budget. And then other revenues, that includes obviously our half-cent sales tax revenues, but also our HOA contributions, as well as some of our other categories, our interest income and then miscellaneous. We did have higher than expected local sales tax collections for the year for the Community Center Fund in particular. Those came in about 20% over budget or about $600,000. In total, Community Center Fund revenues were $9.5 million, exceeding budget by about 28% or $2.1 million. And then finally, the expenditures for the Community Center Fund contracted operating came in about on budget. The actuals you see there is a reflection of, so they had the strong revenue growth. They had strong food and beverage, strong merchandise sales. Obviously, on the expenditure side of things, you're going to see higher cost of sales as a result. And so that really drove those overages there, but just due to again, stronger performance with our revenues. Town operating expenditures exceeded budget just a smidge. Actuals you see there about $1.18 million. We did have some additional contract personnel services that we paid out in relation to our programming. So obviously when we have additional classes, additional demand, we also need to pay for the contractors for those classes. So that is reflected there. But there were also some additional grounds maintenance costs in the fund. Capital outlay came in about on budget, $139,000 in actuals, just over a smidge. That was due to some needs that we saw throughout the fiscal year at both the community center and the PUSH facility. And then transfers out, we've mentioned these throughout the year. We had budgeted full principal and interest payment on our Parks and Rec bonds, only had an interest payment this fiscal year. So that is the variance you see there of about $1.6 million. In total, Community Center Fund expenditures were at $6.3 million, under budget by about $1.5 million or 18.8%. And then finally, our chart for the Community Center Fund, revenues of $9.5 million compared to $7.6 million, so a very strong year for the Community Center. Expenditures of $6.3 million compared to $5.8 million last year. That's just a result of really full operations, getting back in the swing of things. Obviously, expenditures are going to increase a bit as a result of that. We did budget to use fund balance in the Community Center Fund of about $400,000. Due to the revenues exceeding budget, plus some of the variance you saw there with the transfers out, we are looking at a surplus in the fund of about $3.2 million. And that's going to land us at an ending fund balance of about $5.9 million in the Community Center Fund. And with that, we will take any questions you may have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Gomez. Questions from council? Council Member Bowen?
Thank you, Ms. Gomez, for your presentation. And I do agree with the assessment that going from $14 million to $2.9 million is a good year. But I also recall in my review of where we were in May, our actual deficit at that point was only $800,000, and our projection for the year was $2 million. So in my personal view, we had a good year, but we didn't necessarily have a very good June. And I have some questions regarding some of the things I noticed in the June accounting that seemed to impact our end deficit for the year. Mm-hmm. The first is a question regarding general administration expenses. When I go to the May report and I look at the forecast, it seemed to me we were expecting to spend about $277,000 in June in general administration. But in the June final report, we spent $1.5 million, which is about five times what we forecast. And when I asked the question, and we got a staff report, and I really appreciate that, the response was reallocation of ROMSPN settlement costs into general administration. And my first question is, what is the amount of ROMSPN settlement costs that appeared in general administration in June?
Sure, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I believe that reclass was about $850,000 for the settlement payment. And when that payment was first processed, it was in one of our balance sheet accounts, a deposits payable account, pending further analysis. At the end of each fiscal year, we always do a thorough review of all our balance sheet accounts and kind of reassess whether balances are appropriate, anything needs to be reclassed. We reached out to our auditors on this specific item for advice on whether it should remain in the deposits account or whether it should be reclassed to expenditures. They did advise that we reclass it as a settlement claim expenditure, which is a line item in general administration. And so in June, as we were wrapping up the fiscal year, making our final adjustments, that was one adjustment that we needed to post for the end of the year.
I also noted that we overran by about $1.2 million. So the response at $850,000 or so approximately was related to Rompspin is helpful. What about the other $350,000 or so? What happened in June for us to exceed our forecast by so much? I see it us as being about double of what we forecast.
Councilmember Bowen, I'd have to look back at the specifics of what else we booked at fiscal year end, but oftentimes there's some catch up and accruals that take place. For example, credit card, any purchase card transactions that we had to accrue back. Oftentimes June looks that way. It's a heavy month in terms of final expenditures because there are final items that we need to book. There are final items that we need to account for that would not have necessarily been recorded in the previous months. And so oftentimes, as a month in general, June doesn't look too hot because we are booking final items per our auditors in preparation for them coming out for our field work.
And that's understandable, but I need to press on the forecast. The forecast was only for $277,000, and it was for June, which you acknowledge is a month when a lot of accruals come in, a lot of unexpected things come in. Why do you suppose the forecast was only for $277,000 in light of what you've just told us, what we can expect in June?
Well, Councilmember Bowen, I don't think we had spoken with our auditors on the settlement, on the Rompspin settlement at that point. We did, you know, get advice from them likely after we brought the May financials to council. So it's just one of those year-end assessments that we are doing. You know, should we have done that earlier? I mean, I guess it would have been, you know, maybe we should have consulted with them a little bit sooner, but this was just our regular year-end review of our balances and our balance sheets and seeing what we needed to reclass, if anything, at the end of the year.
And I note the Rompspin expenses are a reclassification. Where were they classified as of May 2022?
They were in a balance sheet account, a deposits payable account, so they would not have been an expenditure account. They were sitting on a liability account.
Mr. Mayor, if I may jump in just for clarification, they were in a deposits account, which is an asset account, not a liability account. And so the reason why they were in a deposits account is because there was we knew that we were going to be acquiring that property shortly in July. That was certainly the anticipation, and that in fact did occur. And so when we initially posted it as a deposit, thinking that it may be able to be applied to the overall acquisition when that property was gifted or donated to the town, and we acquired it from the conservation fund. And so just needed to provide clarification there. It's a deposits. It's an asset account, not a liability account. That's a debit on the balance sheet, and that's why it was placed in that account, is because we thought we may be able to apply it to the acquisition of that property. But as it turned out, we sent the agreement to our auditors, and they provided clarification that they thought the more conservative treatment was to actually post it to the expenditure account in June, and that's where that reclassification was made. So I just want to provide that clarification. Thank you.
So without the guidance from the auditors, we would have identified that $850,000 as an asset rather than a liability as it's posted now at year end?
Mr. Mayor, members of council, Councilmember Bowen, that's correct. We knew that the property appraised at significantly higher than $885,000, and that was actually the amount wasn't $850,000, it was $885,000 for the record. And so we knew that that property appraised at significantly higher than that amount, and so we thought there might be the possibility or the potential to apply that as a deposit and categorize it as a deposit, in effect like a down payment type of arrangement. But our auditors did not agree with that treatment. When you place it in the asset account, it doesn't obviously roll through your income statement, so you don't see that you don't see that impact on expenditures and total spend. And so that's not unusual to kind of in a sense bookmark it or place it to the side until we wait for final. Because our auditors need to opine on our financial statements that they're materially correct, to wait for their guidance on something like that, just to make sure, because we want to make sure we get a clean opinion from our auditors at year end. So, yeah, absolutely. This is not uncommon to kind of ballpark something or place it to the side on a balance sheet account, and then when we receive that guidance, to actually deal with it appropriately. And, you know, had the auditors determined that that could have been applied as a down payment, we certainly would have left it in that deposit account, and you wouldn't have seen it roll through G&A at the end of the year. So,
but it did roll through G&A, correct?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's correct, yes.
Each month you prepare sort of a synopsis, a report for us to explain that month's actuals and, you know, what's happened in that month. I noted that this particular transaction wasn't even mentioned in that report, even though it's of a significant dollar value, $850,000. Why isn't that mentioned in your report to council?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, it wasn't mentioned simply from the standpoint that we weren't sure what that treatment was going to be. And we didn't see a reason to mention it until we received the auditor's guidance on that issue. And candidly, again, if they would have instructed us that that treatment to leave it in that deposit account was appropriate, we probably wouldn't have, there wouldn't have been a reason or a need to disclose that. Certainly, in my mind, my opinion, and so when the auditors provided that guidance, then it kind of became a larger issue . So we were just waiting for their input, their guidance on that issue, and there's a lot that happens at year end, and it's hard to catch everything. We have a lot of funds. This isn't certainly the only fund. There's a lot of transactions. Again, we're wrapping up budget season. There's a lot that's happening in finance, and I don't want to say that this was overlooked. We were certainly aware of it. We knew that we needed to deal with it prior to year end. And we did so, but unfortunately, we didn't really receive that guidance until June. So,
in my view, we recognize that expense when we create Schedule A, Attachment A. I always say Schedule, but it's Attachment A, and we attach it to an agenda and we post that to the public and we say we're going to talk about it, at the next council meeting. So. Forgive me if I'm less than fully convinced by the auditor treatment impacting whether or not we should see in our report something that helped drive our projected year-end deficit from $2 million to $2.9 million in just 1 month is not reported to us. And I'd like to let the public know, how do I find these things? I look. I look because I'm a concerned resident. I look because I'm a concerned council member. And I just wanted to let everybody know and get this on the tape. These are not that hard to find. I find them frequently, and I'm really concerned by that response, because once we put the report out to council and we say this is our year-end result, we've reported that it's an $885,000 or $850,000 cost, not an asset. So, like I said, I was discouraged, but I'll follow up with a different line of questions regarding what we call interest income.
Mr. Mayor, if I may address that just really quickly. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, members of council, there is no intent whatsoever from finance or city staff to mislead either council or the public on the finances of this town. So I just want to put that out there first off. Secondly, had the auditors taken a different approach, this would not have rolled through expenditures. I need to reiterate that point. So it would have stayed on the balance sheet. There would have been no impact to the income statement. And in reality, when you look at it, when we acquire the property or acquired the property this year, it will be recorded as a donation to the town, as an asset on the town's statement of net position. And the net impact of that town-wide or even in the general fund over the two fiscal years is nil. That's what the net impact is, because you're basically netting the full the fair market value of the property this fiscal year. We're capturing the fair market value of that donation this fiscal year as it was appraised, and it's netted against that $885,000 that was paid last fiscal year. If you want to think of it that way. So over the two fiscal years, it all nets out. So over the long run, in terms of the impact on the statement of net position and the town's finances, it's the same. It literally is the same. It makes last fiscal year look worse. It's going to make this fiscal year look better. It's 6 to 1, half dozen to the other. The net impact to the town financially is the same over the two-year period. It's just a timing difference.
And thank you for that, Dave. But I maintain these are our written financial records. And that's exactly the type of explanation you just gave is exactly, in my view, what the report to council is for, to explain. And something you maintain that may look bad to council, may look bad to somebody looking at our June financials a couple of years from now, is absolutely not necessarily a long-term negative for the town. So, you know, I just wanted to reiterate, that's what I'm looking for in that summary. You know, things really did change, and I haven't seen any pushback from staff when I ask questions. These are legitimate changes that we respond to, and I'm a little disappointed we don't see them in the report. That's all. So I'll go on to the next question, which is about what we call interest income, and that appears in attachments A, which is the general fund, B, the highway fund, and C1, the community center fund. I'd like to note the last time that finances were reported to us was on July 20th. And I'd like to ask the question, when does the fiscal year end?
Councilmember Bowen, the fiscal year ends June 30. We are still booking things into mid-September and possibly even farther.
So it is correct. The May report and forecast was made after the fiscal year had
It was before we did the mark-to-market adjustment, where we posted the fair market value of our investments at fiscal year end. That had not been booked at that point.
Okay. When I look at the three individual line items that we call interest income, the one in the general fund, as of May, on July 20th, was projected to be $150,000 positive at year end. As of June, which is reported tonight, it's negative $770K. So that's a change just for the general fund of over $900K.
Right. Yes, that's entirely the unrealized mark-to-market that we were required to book at year end. In May, it was just the interest income that we had recognized throughout the year, our dividends and our realized interest income that we had received. And, trying to forecast that year-end unrealized loss, which is just a paper booking that we're required to enter. It's not a realized loss on our investments. May did not have that entry in there. That's always an entry that we do, one of the very last items that we book, quite frankly, as part of the fiscal year before our auditors come out and do their site work. So
I'd like to note, it's not the May entry. It's the forecast for June that was $150K.
Right, yes.
And so we went from thinking at the end of the year when everything settled out, we'd be $150K to the positive, and we go $778K to the negative. And I'd just like to briefly mention, once again, this is something you don't find in the June report. Rather, you need to go through the finances, kind of account by account to see this. And I'm concerned because that's, you know, $1 million worth of, you know, investment loss that we're taking at the end of the year that we're not even seeing on July 20th, which is after the end of the fiscal year. And I'll just reiterate the point. I think that that's what the monthly status report to council is to help explain the numbers. I looked at May and I looked at June, and in May it said we had a great year. You know, we were 800,000 current account negative and predicting 2 million for a deficit. And when I read the June report, it says we had a great year and we're $2.9 million to the negative. So it's almost in the June report, we were only talking about the entire year. But the actual month of June, as we can see from the question and answers we just had, had a lot of major activity that happened. And it wasn't really pointed out
in the
reporting. And the point of asking these questions, it's you can never do anything about the past, but there's plenty of future activities in this area. We're always going to have a monthly report, maybe the first monthly report in the 2022-2023 fiscal year, can take into account some of these comments and concerns raised by council. That's all.
Okay. Those are my questions. Other questions?
Those are my questions.
Councilmember Nicholson?
This is for Dave. You're sitting right next to me. But what is our current borrowing rate that we would get for bonds right now?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, members of the council, it's anywhere from 3.5% to 4%. And rising could be actually a little bit higher than that because obviously, as you're probably well aware, the Fed took another action today and raised their federal funds rate by 0.75%.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments? I just wanted to note, I don't have a question, Ms. Gomez, but in the write-up that was provided to council, I did note that in the report in terms of golf that we ended the year very much in the positive, and that was without the sales tax addition or the HOA contribution. So
that's correct,
that's really
Mr. Mayor.
An incredible story, and I want to thank Bernie and everyone that has helped to make that happen. Thank you. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I appreciate this discussion with Councilmember Bowen and the finance staff, and I want to express my appreciation to you for responding to those questions and explaining the way that those things have been booked and working for council. And regarding the, you know, $885,000, that's an expense that had been previously made public when the settlement occurred. And so I just want to reiterate that there was, as you've stated, no intention of hiding anything. It's just a difference of where it would end up being booked at the fiscal year. So I want to thank you for, you know, checking with the auditors and making sure that we followed the best practices and did the best things moving forward. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Councilmember Green.
I just want to echo my appreciation. Whenever I need to see you or need to see Dave about any of my questions, you guys are always willing to help, and I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Councilmember Bowen?
A slightly different comment about golf. What I think is the amazing story is not that we don't need a subsidy now, but rather how we managed to spend so much money the first few years, how we managed to consume the entire $2.4 million, and have almost no money in the community center fund at year end. It's 17, 18, 18, 19, 19, 20. I will always speak up about this because I see a positive correlation between my speaking up and the accumulation of funds in the community center at year end, which is now $6.2 million. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Well, I'd like to thank Councilmember Bowen for generating the $6.2 million. It's very generous of him. But on a more serious note, I think it's significant that the Community Center Fund is doing so well so shortly after people were stating that it was going to bankrupt the community. It was completely false. The fund is doing fantastic. In fact, millions of dollars are being transferred out of the fund for other projects. And just as a reminder, it's coming up on a future agenda item. It's time we addressed the community center and brought that 40-year-old facility up to date and ADA compliant.
Ms. Gomez, thank you for your report tonight. We appreciate it.
Mr. Mayor, if I may address one more thing before this
item is
closed out. Members of the council. I just want to address the investment income because I think the public needs to understand what's going on here. The investment losses that were sustained are unrealized investment losses. And those losses are, as Ms. Gomez mentioned earlier, they're paper losses. They are not realized losses. Those realized losses would happen if the town divested itself of its, of its underlying investments prior to maturity. Because we typically take a hold to maturity approach with our underlying investment portfolio, those unrealized losses are amortized over the life of those investments until they are matured, fully matured. So although the investment income may look negative, the realized income to the town, which is probably more pertinent or more important, because we're going to recapture those losses, the realized income over this past year was positive. So I just need to point that out for the public so that there's an understanding that we did not, invest in shady investments or anything like that. These are very safe, secure investments that the town invests in for its portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gephardt. Thank you, Ms. Gomez. We'll move on to the consent agenda. I've had a request from Councilmember Bowen and Councilmember Jones-Ivy to pull item B. I move to approve item A and C.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to... I'm sorry. I got my items mixed up.
Okay. So we're on the consent agenda. As I mentioned, I've had two requests, Councilmember Bowen and Councilmember Jones-Ivy, to pull item B. I've made a motion to approve items A and C.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Councilmember Bowen, you were the first to request to pull item B. I'll turn the time to you.
Thank you. Per our town rules, consent agenda items are intended to be of both a routine and a non-controversial nature. Several residents reached out to me today with concerns about agenda item B, and I agreed with them, but they just simply had different concerns than I had. Something that's germane to what we're very much talking about right now, and the reason why I wanted to talk about consent agenda item B, is there's a statement in there that allowing the town to hang on to the money and effectively open up a line of credit for the water utility will present guaranteed returns to the town. I'm a little bit surprised by that in light of the discussion we just had about our interest income where we lost about $1 million this year. The second reason why I wanted to bring this up is several residents mentioned to me that this item effectively turns the town general fund into a bank for the water utility. We're taking ARP money of approximately $5.4 million, and we're proposing to loan it to the water utility. I was really surprised by this because I felt like I paid a lot of attention in the discussions that we had in the budget back in April, and I don't recall any mention whatsoever of a loan. It was a transfer. But today in my research, I do realize, where a loan was mentioned, and that was in the PDF file created for the study sessions that I don't believe we ever opened or ever mentioned. We went over the PowerPoints. So there is a proposal as of April that we would take ARP money, $5.4 million, and propose to loan it to an enterprise fund, the water utility. And I wanted to open this up for discussion because I don't think this is a consent agenda item at all. This is something new and novel. And tonight we have no regular agenda items. Incredibly enough, we have nothing but we decided this was a consent agenda item, and it's for that reason that I wanted to open it up. Thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My concern came in because it's ARPA funds and because I believe those funds can be designated for infrastructure projects. And if this is an infrastructure project that Water Utility is going to be undertaking with the money, I am not understanding as to why it has to be a loan. I had no idea that we could loan another entity within the town money. So I'd like to have that addressed, please.
Mr. Mayor,
Councilmember Solomon.
I have the same question as Councilmember Jones-Ivey. We're supposed to give that $5.38 million to the water utility, because we got it for that purpose. Yet now we're saying, oh, we'll be nice and we'll lend it to you and you can pay it back with interest, and the ratepayers of the water utility will have to pay that interest, and then we'll just use it for what we want. So, yeah, to me it's concerning also is if we got $5.83 million for the water utility, let's give it to them. And if they don't need it for current projects, we certainly know we're talking about the potential of extending the reclaimed water line to the rest of the town's facilities. So that's what I don't understand, is why we're even discussing a loan as opposed to just giving them the money as it, my understanding was it was allocated.
Ms. Jacobs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I'll start and then I'll turn this over to our chief financial officer. So when we presented this item and my recommended budget to you back in April, I did specify at that time that I'm recommending that this $5.4 million go to the water utility, and that in talking with our auditors, we found a creative way that would allow the water utility to save money they were planning on borrowing for their future capital projects. So they would have access to the funds at a much lower rate than what they were planning. And the council would then be able to, in return, allocate that $5 million over time to other community projects that you so choose in the future. Ultimately, and again, I think we discussed this in our budget. It was our CFO who recommended that it be memorialized in agreement. We indicated to you during those study sessions, at least one, perhaps more, that we will be bringing back to you a formalized agreement for this interloan payback over time, and so we proceeded under that understanding that money could then be available for other things, recreation projects in the future, or whatever it is that the council were to decide. So ultimately, and I'll turn this over to Mr. Gephardt here, it is, of course, the town council's policy decision as to whether or not you would like to see those water utility resources come back for expenditure in the general fund, or if you want to simply just apply them to the water utility. My recommendation is that this still saves the water utility dollars, because they were planning on borrowing anyway. They will now have to skip out on the borrowing costs. They'll borrow for a lower interest rate because now the interest rates have gone way up. And then the community will still benefit from the use of $5.4 million over time for other general fund needs in your capital program. And with that, I'll turn that over to Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, and thank you, Town Manager Jacobs, for that. First off, I just need to state for the record to correct and clarify language in the resolution before you this evening that the lending fund is, in fact, the general fund, which I think we all understand, but if you look at the resolution language, it's got them flipped, and the borrowing fund is the water fund. So I just need to correct that for the record. That's just a simple error there, and I apologize for that oversight. Second, whether it comes to looking at options for mitigating our unfunded actuarial liability for PSPRS or any other town financial issue. I'm always seeking a balanced approach to solving problems and looking for win-win solutions to issues. And to me, this certainly fits the mold of that. The ARPA monies were given to the town. They were not given to the town water utility. So I need to be very clear about that. The town has full discretion within the rules, final rules of the Treasury as to where these funds go. And I included in my council memorandum the different options available to you. There's literally about a 470-page document. I gave you the summarized version that I attached to your agenda item this evening because I didn't think, maybe Councilmember Bowen wanted to look at the full 470 pages, but I assume that most of you probably did not. I think the summary it probably provides enough guidance and gives you a sense and flavor for the eligible utilization of these funds and resources. With that said, we can have the discussion as to why I think this is, a win-win approach. Number one, I don't want to just regurgitate the information in my council item this evening, but number one, it does assist our water utility because if these funds were not applied to the water utility, which, again, is a council decision, and they certainly don't have to be, but if they were not given to the water utility, the town could utilize these funds for different purposes as well, but those purposes are very restrictive. And so that's an issue. But then we recognize that the water utility, we have really kind of a clean runway to utilize these funds for that purpose, for infrastructure. We have the needs in the water utility that have been discussed by our water utility director, Peter Abraham. So and they're in our CIP, and we've got actually some charts that we can pull up as to where these funds would go, which specific projects they would be applied to. And then as Ms. Jacobs mentioned, if they weren't utilized in the water utility, which again is council decision, the water utility would have to borrow at a much higher rate. Not just a higher rate, but also borrowing costs associated with that rate. And so what we're proposing this evening is a below market interest loan that's payable back over time to the general fund, which releases the restrictions on these funds. So the water utility benefits, that's a win for them. The town overall, the town general fund benefits, that's a win for the town as well and its residents. So really, I view this as a win-win solution for these funds and these resources. And I can show you, again, I've got some charts if we want to pull them up. If you look at the structure of the debt for the water utility, the structure of the debt really declines significantly after fiscal year 2026. And so if you look at that, really that's around the time that the water utility would start repaying. They would probably draw down this loan entirely and start repaying that loan back to the general fund over the 15-year time frame. If you look at the comparison of their current debt structure versus what's proposed here, there literally is very little impact. And again, it delays the water utility having to go out and look for external financing, which is a significant benefit to the water utility. And again, the benefit to the general fund is significant over time as well. So I just view this as a win-win solution. It's not the only option out there. And if council has a better approach or different ideas as to how these funds are utilized, staff is certainly open to council direction. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon and then Vice Mayor Barrett.
All right, let's take a couple of steps back here. Because it's obviously I'm not looking at discussing or getting an explanation about is it better for the town to lend the water utility money or for them to go out and borrow the money. That's to me irrelevant to this whole conversation. The point is we received about $16 million in funds. According to our report, $10 million of those funds we were told use however you want. Okay, and the town did. We've used it in a lot of different ways. The remainder had to be used in very specific ways. One of the specific ways was for certain water projects. Therefore, we said the $5.38 million will go for those water projects. What it sounds like we're doing is we're trying to, okay, obviously, if we gave them $5.8 million, they wouldn't have to borrow anything, all right? They'd have the capital that the town has. Obviously, all the money came to the town, just like everything. That $10 million that got spent on all different departments and programs or will be spent all came to the town. So saying, well, it came to the town, not the water utility. The water utility is part of the town. So my problem with this is we're saying, let's figure out how we can get around these restrictions and get these restrictions moved. So let's be nice guys and lend money to the water utility, make them pay it back to us using ratepayers' fees with interest. And then we take that money and now we have a blank check to use it however we want. So that's my inherent problem with this whole process. If the $5.83 million needs to be spent on certain areas, and council needs to decide, needs to know what those areas are, what the limitations are, what the needs are, and what's the best way to apply those funds. Not lend them to somebody, then get them back over 15 years when the restrictions have expired and say, now we have all this money we can use however we want. That's the main difficulty I have with this. And if the water utility doesn't need it, do we need it elsewhere? We need a new police station. It's going to cost us $30 million. And it's been stated several times that we don't have any source of funds for that. So this is certainly something that doesn't have to be decided tonight. But I certainly don't want to go in and vote in favor of this loan this evening. At minimum, I would want to see a future agenda item where staff comes back and presents to council, this is how these funds, these are the restrictions, here's the potential, here's our needs, and where we can potentially use them.
Mr. Mayor, if I can respond to Council Member Solomon's concerns. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Council Member Solomon, the reason why this approach is being recommended is because the water utility is really designed to be self-supporting. It's the same reason why we have why we charge the water utility administrative costs and fees for certain services that the town provides on the water utility's behalf. Yes, the water utility is part of the town's overall structure. I do agree with that, but this provides a little more, a little more bifurcation and a little bit cleaner type of approach than simply. I mean, could the town gift it? Absolutely the town could gift these funds to the water utility, but to charge them interest, I think it provides that appearance that the water utility is self-supporting and that its user fees and charges adequately cover its costs. And that's really what the intent of the water utility is. If the town general fund gifts the money to the water utility, I don't know how you could necessarily argue that the town water utility is self-supporting because it's getting this large cash gift from the general fund or from the town overall for its infrastructure projects. So that's really why this structure is being recommended. Again, it's a nominal amount. The interest rate is a nominal amount, but it does provide a little bit of, a good faith that the water utility is a self-supporting entity and that its user charges and fees that it charges its customers support the entire operations. It's not meant to be subsidized by the general fund or by the town, the town operations in general. So that would be my response to your concerns, and I hope that clarifies. Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barron.
Thank you. I'd like to follow up a little bit on what Mr. Gephardt was just saying and ask about our policies. I believe our water utility is our main enterprise fund, which means that it has to be self-supporting, right? Do we have a policy that reflects that? And if we gifted funds, would that then undermine the fact that the water utility is an enterprise fund?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, council members, there's not a specific policy, town policy, that reflects that. What I can tell you is that is best practice, and you know that's what an enterprise fund. That's why it's considered an enterprise fund and not a special revenue fund or some other type of governmental fund. That's what really sets it apart, is that it's funded by user fee charges and that it's meant to be really funded and operated like a business. It's meant to be self-supporting. It's not meant to be subsidized. Now, you can find many examples across the nation where water utilities are not self-supporting and they are subsidized by the general fund. But that is not certainly best practice. And we have a very, very strong water utility here. I think we have a very good, strong history of our water utility fully funding its operations. And we want to certainly continue that moving forward.
Okay. My next question is a police station a valid use of these funds?
Mr. Mayor, if I may, and Vice Mayor Barrett, I think I want to clarify something with the ARPA funds will be used by the water utility in conformance with the rules of ARPA. The water utility will then give back over time other water utility funds that are not ARPA dollars, and those will come back to the town, and they could be used for other priorities like a future police station, which is, again, one of the reasons why we thought this was a very creative and innovative approach to give the council the ability to apply $5.4 million of other water utility funds that they would otherwise need back to other priorities that you have, such as a police station, or, as you know, we're going to be going over costs for the Naranja Park and the rest of the bond projects at your next meeting. So those are some of the things that you would then have the flexibility to apply down the road.
Yeah, I think we understand how this proposal works, but it was mentioned that if we weren't to do this proposal or we were to continue it or look at other projects, that's my question. Is a police station an eligible project for ARPA funds?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, members of council, it is not. The capital, there are certain restrictions on capital. Water doesn't have as many. As it relates to infrastructure, clean water, building wells, rehabilitating, providing more water capacity. Those are pretty easy and bright line projects that we have in our capital improvement program. That we would be utilizing these funds for. But as it relates to other types of capital projects, a police station would not qualify, and there are very few, in fact, capital projects that would. It's very, very restrictive on the capital side. So as you look at what would qualify, a lot of the types of projects that would qualify would require, once the funds were completely expended, they're more programmatic in nature, so they would be ongoing costs that the town would have to bear well into the future. And so, again, this provides kind of a challenge, because once you've utilized all the ARPA monies and you don't have federal funds coming in, then the town has to pick up basically an unfunded mandate moving forward and bear these costs, or scrap the program altogether, which a future council could decide to do. But just the challenges of that, I just don't think that that lends itself to wise wise financial decisions moving forward. So,
okay, thank you. So, I mean, I'm sympathetic to the other points, because we definitely don't want to get too creative in our financing. However, I understand the idea of helping the water utility to be able to finance their capital projects while not undermining its enterprise fund status, which I think is an important thing to not undermine. So thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yes, Mr. Gephardt, you've said that by making a loan to our water utility, it would essentially lift the restrictions on the funds. What are the current restrictions on the ARPA funds?
Mr. Mayor, Council Member Jones-Ivey, so there are certain, I'll say, buckets, and they're listed in my council memorandum. So one is certainly revenue recovery, which we've utilized the $10 million provision, the standard deduction provision for standard allowance provision for revenue recovery. So that really is kind of taken off the table. So then there's three remaining buckets that are eligible. One is public health and economic impacts. And so really what that's looking at is economic impacts due to COVID, where certain industries or certain classes of that are under that are economically disadvantaged, certain classes of people or households or whatever, where we would be either providing loans or grants or even small business assistance, nonprofit assistance, that type of thing, to try to deal with the economic impacts of COVID. So that's one bucket. Another bucket is premium pay. And really what that's looking at is the guidance is really pretty specific with premium pay, looking at those employees those employees that are really lower compensated but directly responding to the COVID pandemic and providing incentive to them, economic incentive, basically boosting their pay, and it has to be reasonable, but boosting their pay to assist them through the pandemic. And so that's another category is premium pay. And then the third category, which is before you this evening, water, sewer, I'll throw storm drain in there. That was added in the final rules, and then broadband infrastructure. And we looked at broadband as a potential here, but as we looked at it and dug into it, broadband, again, it's really, the guidance is really specific that it needs to provide broadband, increased broadband service or coverage to those disadvantaged communities or economically challenged communities or communities or parts of the community that don't have adequate broadband service and coverage. And we found that could be problematic with our town. And so it just seemed a little bit restrictive. We wanted to make sure that, again, we were in full compliance with how we utilize these resources.
Thank you.
Mr. Gephardt, is the $5.38 million, is there a time sensitivity to this?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, members of council, there is. Again, the amounts need to be obligated by December 31st, 2024, and completely spent by December 31st, 2026. So there is some time here, but not much. If we, you know, we kind of need to have a direction as to which way we're going with the utilization of these monies. And so, again, that's why the agenda item was proposed for you this evening.
Well, because it was agendized as a consent item and has been taken off the consent, there's been a number of questions. There's clearly some continuing questions, concern with council and with the public at large. I'd like to recommend that this be agendized in a future agenda council meeting so that we can give staff opportunity to...
I'll second.
Be better prepared, because quite honestly, it's not entirely fair without it being agendized. So I've made that motion. We have a second. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Ayes have it, 7-0. Thank you. Okay, we're going to adjourn the regular session and go into a study session. So I'm calling the study session to order. Mr. Standish.
Presentation and possible discussion of scope of work for a planned housing study per the Town Council's fiscal year 21-22 through fiscal year 22-23 strategic leadership plan.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Our Principal Planner Melanie Sims will present this item and be followed with council questions. Ms. Sims.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. So our purpose of this item is to present the proposed scope of work for the Oro Valley Housing Study. So the scope presented this evening represents best practices identified nationally, state, and through local resources. It fulfills the guidance provided in the Your Voice, Our Future General Plan and additional direction from the Town Council Strategic Leadership Plan. It also incorporates the feedback that staff has received to date from the Planning and Zoning Commission as well as Town Council. The importance of the housing study is that it will provide data to inform decision-making on development proposals, but it will also provide a critical foundation for the next general plan update. Work has already begun on preparing for the next general plan, which must be ratified by the voters in 2026. Housing is an integral aspect as it impacts most other key general plan elements, such as water, traffic, and town services. And as shown on the screen, housing is a standard element in the background report used for the general plan updates. Specifically, it provides a basis to have a dialogue with the community to create goals, policies, and actions for the next general plan. So to develop the proposed scope for the housing study, staff first reviewed the guiding documents and state law requirements for the next general plan. We then looked at several other jurisdictions throughout the state and some national resources. And from this research, we created a tailored scope that is based on best practices, meets the objectives of the guiding documents as well as state law requirements, and again incorporates the feedback that we have received to date. The proposed scope is divided into four parts, each of which builds on the other. Some key aspects that we've incorporated into the scope include the characteristics that should be inventoried to not only understand the quantity, but also the quality of the existing housing stock, expanding beyond income to understand affordability and consumer needs, projecting the town's housing supply through trends and land availability, and tying housing to economic development and the amount of retail that will be supported by the existing and projected housing stock, and then also the opportunities and constraints in meeting the town's housing needs through recommendations. Now, this last part also includes an analysis of any unintended impacts on the environment, water, traffic, and also a balance between residential and non-residential land. The timeline and process for understanding the town's housing needs and subsequent goals and policies is shown on the screen. This two-step approach was used in most other jurisdictions and includes a data gathering step and then a community outreach step. So after the data is gathered and presented to the commission and council for informational purposes, community input on the findings and recommendations from the study will be collected during the extensive general plan outreach process. This includes various methods to attract all demographics and geographics throughout the town. The data and community feedback will be used to create the goals and policies and actions in the next general plan, which ultimately must be approved by the voters. To date, the housing study was discussed by Town Council last December through a study session. It was then presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission in August, and we also received some additional feedback from Council last month. The proposed scope incorporates the feedback that we received, and this includes analyzing the proposed recommendations for any unintended consequences on town infrastructure and services, or having a complete community with a mix of land uses to serve current and future residents, understanding the needs and affordability for current and future residents, including the town's workforce, by looking at, again, more than income, but also age and abilities, and providing a regional context for housing as well as economic development. And to address the feedback regarding community input, the extensive community outreach process associated with the next general plan update will provide a thorough opportunity to gather the community's feedback on the housing findings and recommendations. In summary, the proposed scope represents the best practices nationally, statewide, and locally. It incorporates the feedback that we've received to date while satisfying the town's objectives in the guiding documents. This fact-based housing study, along with the rest of the background report, will be provided to the council next fall, and it will then be used to start a dialogue with the community to help develop the goals and policies and actions in the next general plan. This concludes my presentation, and again tonight we are looking for feedback from the council so we can finalize the scope and contract a consultant to help complete the study. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. So I'll open it to council for questions and feedback. Vice Mayor Barrett, then Council Member Bowen.
Thank you. Okay, I have a couple of key thoughts and feedback. One is, I think that the criteria for the housing study needs to be made clear up front and abundantly clear in the housing study. So specifically, if we say we're looking at how much housing we need in order to meet market demand, then that needs to be clearly specified what that means. Because to me, market demand sounds like it means to have enough houses for everyone who would potentially want to live in Oro Valley. Or if we say we need enough housing to support X amount of retail or X amount of businesses or X amount of commercial. And you alluded to that, but just when the housing study does come forward, I think that those criteria that are being utilized need to be made abundantly clear. And I'm sure that they will be, but I just want to say that. And then you mentioned the recognition of trade-offs. That was something that I wanted to mention as well. What the impact is to our community of changing commercial land into housing when we don't have a property tax and we're funded by sales taxes. So that's a specific thing that's specific to our community in terms of what that trade-off could be. And then another key one that you did mention is water and what are the water resources available? Because we all know that having land versus having water are two different key elements to being able to support future things. And then the final comment that I had was, we talk about doing surveys and things as part of the next general plan, but I believe that a statistically valid survey needs to be done as part of the housing study. Because, and I've said this before, so it didn't come as a surprise. But I think it's relevant and important for us moving forward to know what our residents think and feel about these different options and ideas that are being proposed. And that's something that we haven't really had available or had access to as we make these decisions. And so I'd like to see that as part of the housing study, just like it was as part of the Parks and Rec Master Plan. We did a statistically valid survey. And similarly, if we're going to be doing a housing study, I feel like we should get that input and input from our residents in that form, in a way that it can be utilized by council to be helpful. So that's it, I think.
Council Member Bowen.
First off, I want to express my appreciation to staff that we had the meeting last December 2nd, 2021. But I want to mention what I think is an important fact about that meeting. It wasn't just about a housing study, but it was about action item 135 in the 2016 general plan. Not a future general plan, but the current general plan that we're working to. And I'll briefly read what action item 135 says. It's not that long. Respond to and plan for the present and future housing needs of the community while considering changes in demographics and overall growth by conducting a housing inventory, developing a housing plan that addresses the needs of a diverse community, and developing zoning strategies that implement the housing plan. In December, I was digging at the housing inventory, and to me, you know, we have an existing general plan, it's 10 years, and we have 5 2-year strategic plans on which action item 135 is contained in one of those strategic plans. I'm really concerned that we're conflating current general plan action item work with anticipated needs for what we're going to have in the 2026 general plan. I'd like to focus on, you know, what's, I think, remains open for the 2016 general plan, and that is the action that I see, conducting a housing inventory. For staff would be, you know, in your mind, what is a housing inventory?
Thank you, Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Bowen. So a housing inventory will provide the existing housing stock, number of units, as well as quality of housing. And that's where with this housing study, we're focused more on the data collection, where with a plan or the general plan, it's that's where the community input is brought in to kind of give those guiding goals and policies and the recommended strategies for meeting our housing needs. But the inventory is really our baseline, where we are now.
And focusing specifically on that inventory, it sounds to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that's a physical inventory, correct? It's an identification of houses and condominiums and apartments and mobile homes within Oral Valley.
So, Mayor, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, correct. So the existing housing inventory is what's physically already built or planned. We would also want to look at the projected with the land availability we have so we can get a really comprehensive picture of the housing units that are existing and planned to be developed.
Would you agree that the word inventory seems to strongly imply something that already exists, not in a plan, but physically exists?
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Bowen, correct. When I say plan, I mean already platted for development. So excuse me, let me clarify. That's what I meant by planned.
So I'd like to ask the question, you know, narrowing the scope of what this actually is intended to be, what is preventing us in 2022 from doing a physical housing inventory that's directed by the 2016 general plan?
Sure. So Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Bowen, make sure I understand the question. So as part of the Fuller housing study is that inventory component. And I do think it is important to meet all the guiding the objectives of not only the or the action of the general plan, but the objective of the strategic leadership plan is to do the inventory in addition to looking at our future housing needs and really identify any gaps we may have. And I don't know if that answered your question, so please clarify.
No, I'm really just trying, you know, I see a lot of information being shared with us as to how work on the housing study, which I actually don't see in the general plan. I see, when I search through the general plan, I see how an inventory study. I don't see a generic housing study. But what I'm getting at is what is stopping us from just literally doing a count of inventory, and why I think that's valuable and not wasted money at all. I asked in December 2021 to Mr. Vella, or the planning head, you know, have we ever done an inventory of housing in Oral Valley? And I watched the recording again today, and the answer was no. So we're never going to learn about our housing inventory or any trends until we collect the data for the first time. So that's what I'm driving at. I don't think that this is something that's overcome by events at all. It's a necessary first step. At some point, we're going to have to draw a line in the ground and say, this is our inventory, mm-hmm. and then we're going to take future inventories, you know, and we're going to see, you know, obviously, you guys know I'm very data-driven, and you can't make data-driven decisions without data, right? And as far as I'm concerned, we don't really have any data. We've been talking about getting data. I'm trying to get at what's keeping us from getting what I consider this very important piece of data.
If I may, Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I think, you know, there's a great intersection of concern that the Vice Mayor brought up as far as wanting to provide, you know, get a survey done very specific to housing, to your question about what is it that we need to do as part of our current general plan, and we're also starting to butt up to the point of needing to get to work on our next general plan, and that's going to have steeper, more thorough state-mandated housing requirements and that we have to address as part, because once you hit a population number, you need to do that planning. So what we're trying to do, and you're absolutely right, Councilmember Bowen, the delay last time we were talking about was the census data. being very frustrated that they didn't come out when they said the data was going to come out when it was going to come out. So we finally got the signal from the census folks that we're going to get estimates, not the pure data that we wanted. That got delayed again. But we will at least have usable functional estimates as far as the data that we need to do the inventory, not only of units, but the people in the units. So the census does go into quality of housing metrics and the income numbers and the demographics and lining all those things up, which are part of an inventory. It's not just physical units. It's who's in the units. And it also points toward who might be struggling to stay in their existing units. Where are those vulnerable populations? So that's all part of it. And so we want to get going right now on the inventory part and pulling all that data together. And as we are starting to prepare, the first step to preparing for the general plan for 2026 is creating a public participation plan. That's step one. That's a plan that will come to you. By state law, it's town councils is to approve a public participation plan. Our sense, we watched other jurisdictions do this inventory, the technical part, as a first step. And then second step, similar to the parks plan, go out and do a survey, maybe do three public meetings on housing specifically, and then have an outcome. Our sense, because of our timing of this general plan and the future general plan and the fact that the general plan outreach process is the most intensive outreach process we do, bar none, for any project the town engages with, period. So I was a project manager for the last general plan. The public outreach is the most intensive component over 2 years, where it was statistically valid surveys, and I agree, one should be focused specifically on housing, but also the other metrics of what's important to Ore Valley as separate efforts. Housing is foundational to all of the other elements, as Ms. Sims shared. So I think we have an opportunity by bringing the housing study into the next general plan effort in terms of developing policies, because that is the one effort where we're not just doing statistically valid phone surveys. We're going out to community events to ask people one-on-one. We are doing forums. We're doing gatherings to have discussions. There's different venues, multiple different strata of venues to reach more people. People that, and perhaps the majority of our residents, who don't come to council chambers for meetings. Okay, trying to reach people that are too busy to do that. That's what the general plan outreach is all about. So pardon my long-winded explanation there, but I think, you know, the two efforts start to marry, and it's because of the timing. But you're absolutely right, Councilmember Bowen. You know, we need to get the baseline data down first, and we want to get going on that now. So I hope that helps.
I was very careful to ask Ms. Sims the question, is, was a physical inventory intended? And I must admit I'm a little bit confused now, because I believe her answer was, yes, it's a physical inventory. But I, from gauging your recent response, it's no, it's much more than that. It's a physical inventory and census data.
It all comes together to get a complete baseline data picture. It's all of those components. So
am I understanding you correctly that, you know, in evaluating everything, we have many projects that are going on, right? We have the existing project of the 2016 general plan.
Mm-hmm.
We have the upcoming project of the 2026 general plan.
Correct.
In your estimation, is it wisest for us to perhaps delay the physical housing inventory to better marry up with the 2026 plan than complete it for the 2016 plan?
There is a certain level of urgency to get going now to prepare for for the 2026 general plan effort. Last go round, you know, the community didn't see 3 years of effort, but it took 3 years of effort. First year is doing the studies and the inventories. Right now, today, we're at the go point, same go point 3 years prior to the 2016 effort, where we started doing background studies to prepare the baseline data to have those conversations later as we got to the general plan. We're at the same time junction right now. So we need to get going on the baseline data part now so that it can be used pragmatically for development decisions once it's done. Sure, absolutely, raise the level of dialogue. But it is also to prepare us for the effort that's really got to start now for that 2026 effort. So the 2016 and the 2026 are merging. And as you pointed out, Councilmember Bowen, we wanted to get started on this last year in compliance with the 2016 general plan effort. And we were hungry to do that. But we finally got census five-year data points, estimates, that we can merge into this overall baseline data effort. So I hope that helps.
Well, I hope we can agree to disagree on this, but the 2016 general plan was released in November of 2016. Mm-hmm. I believe you said we're 3 years out. I think we're 4 years out. And a year is considerable. And as I mentioned, I think we have two projects going on, planning for a new general plan, but also executing on one that mm-hmm. you could say is really only yes. 60% done. You know, we still have four more years on our current general plan. And so, you know, they overlap necessarily. There's a three-year period where you're preparing the new one, but you're still working to the old one. And I'm concerned that we're, you know, with so much of our time left, 40% of our time, that we're not focusing enough on, you know, wrapping up and completing and closing up what we committed to do okay. in the first plan.
Now I understand better, Councilmember Bowen. To give you an idea of how much we're not slowing down relative to fulfilling the 2016 general plan, we have three code amendments coming to you, two in October, and another code amendment coming to you in November, December, January, all in to trying to address the 2016 plan. So we're not slowing down on making sure the 2016 promises, and they were promises, are followed through with. We're not slowing down. What we're trying to do is get double bang for our buck. We're satisfying the 2016 general plan ask. At the same time, those same consultants are going to be helping us get ready for 2026. So we don't... it's not a two-step effort. We're trying to combine it into one step. We're going to get into it. Let's get it all finished. It's going to serve us to fulfill 2016. And by the way, it cues us up to be ready for the next effort. So we're trying to get more value out of it by making sure we're doing both at the same time.
And I can appreciate that, the value of wanting to get as much work done with a fixed amount of resources as possible. But what I'm driving at, there's also value in having information available to you to make decisions today.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting a real clear feel, is if we move the housing inventory effectively into the preliminary planning of the 2026 effort, how much longer do we have to wait to see a housing inventory?
If I may, I'm sorry, I haven't addressed your question directly, Council Member Bowen. We want to get the RFP out tomorrow. There's no delay. We're not waiting till 2026. We're not waiting for a year. We want to get it out tomorrow. So what we see is after tonight, and taking in your feedback, we want to get with procurement tomorrow. So there's no delay, and there's no desire to delay. We want to get moving.
And that procurement would involve a consultant who
yes.
would be doing a physical counting of the inventory that exists today.
Right. While harnessing all this census data, bring it all together into a cogent report as described in your council attachment to address all those different topic areas. And then the idea is that as soon as that's wrapped up over the next X number of months that we arrange with the consultant, is that we're going to bring those findings to commission and council, and we're going to ask the consultant to present those findings, not for action, but for discussion, and look for council direction from there. But the intent is to really get into the meat of policy development as that's getting wrapped up with the general plan and doing more surveys, community outreach, community input, to at a very intensive level.
Well, I hope that we continue to balance policy development with follow-through. I'd like to point out there are five strategic leadership plans associated with the 2016 general plan.
Right.
We're only in the third one of them. You know, there's two more. So, we should be full speed ahead on the 2016 general plan because there remains a lot to do, and I really do think that finishing up the action items will inform the work, not detract from it, but inform the work. And you mentioned you were the project manager before, and you know, one of the elements of project management is managing your scope, you know, and making sure that things don't grow beyond what they need to be. And I'm concerned that we're actually growing the scope of what needs to be done 4 years from now and maybe not paying enough attention to the scope we committed to in 2016. And I will stay on that point. And I really appreciate your answers to the questions, and I'll yield the floor so others can ask. Thank you, Byer.
Councilmember Green.
Thank you for taking our questions. As I understand it, we have a small percent of our land left. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And I didn't hear anywhere that we're looking at the annexation, the reality of that as we go through this. And the other thing that's kind of come upon the screen is, since the census, is the quicksand of rental by owner. How will you handle that?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Green. So for the projected, to get the projections of how many houses we will see in the future, part of that will be looking at the annexation policy that was adopted by council and looking at those annexation areas and how many homes, if those areas were to come to fruition as part of Oro Valley, would be added to the town. So that will be part of the housing study. I have to ask if you could repeat the second part of your question, please.
Second part is, how are you dealing with, I mean, what used to be a single family dwelling is now a rental by owner, and that's happening everywhere. I mean, you have Sedona where 30% of it is, you know, how are you going to deal with that? Who's going to go in that? How do you anticipate the population for that? So what are your thoughts on it?
Sure. So Mayor Renfold, Councilmember Green, so part of it will be using the census data to know how many rentals there are in Oro Valley. And so with rentals, it's not just apartments. It's any rental, even if it's a single family home. So that will be one way we'll look at it. And then also we can also look at stormwater bills and water bills to see if there's times when they're turned off. That's one idea we've had to look at. People who leave for the summer as well. So they might only be renting for a short time and then the house is sitting vacant. So we'll also want to be looking into that, into the residency in our homes.
Will annexation be part of your anticipation in doing this study?
Councilmember Green, so we'll be looking more at, we'll be using the annexation policy as our guidance. So there were time frames associated with those annexation areas. So we'll be using that to identify how many homes are in those areas and what the projected time frame was if they were to be annexed and what it could add to the town's housing stock.
Before I go to Vice Mayor Barrett, I'm just going to check in. I saw your hand, Councilmember Nicholson, Councilmember Solomon. I'm just checking in with you. Any questions? But not at this moment, but if you do, I'll come back to you. Councilmember Jones-Ivy. Okay, Councilmember Nicholson.
With the housing study, is there any way to look at the possibility of fourplexes? I don't know what the rest of the council thinks, but you hear a lot of development and people say, you know, the apartments, they're going to be owned by some commercial person, lives in some other country or other part of the state or whatever, but not residents. One thing with wealth generation in America is with real estate. And with fourplexes, generally you're going to have one person living in one and three other people being units, and then that person is actually generating wealth that's in Oro Valley. And another part is, like, air traffic controller, so I work with a lot of military veterans. They would love to be able to buy a fourplex because they get the VA loan, which they can buy up to four units. So they live in one, and then the other three people rent the other ones. And then that's a way that they can move in a place like in Oro Valley, because essentially, you know, it costs about $150,000 to build each unit. So it's $600,000, but the rent from the other three make it so they can afford to live in Oro Valley. And I think they'd be good citizens to have in Oro Valley. But yeah, I don't know if we ever look at that. There may not be much demand from developers thinking about building it because they think it's maybe not a product that it could build or develop, but I don't know. I know I don't see Tucson developing them anymore, Oro Valley, but Mo was talking a little bit about homeowners that don't live here. Like Marana, I think they just did a build-to-rent 360 units for houses that are only for rentals. They're homes, regular, beautiful 300-square-foot homes, but they're build-to-rent. Mo talked about Sedona. They're 30% Airbnbs. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we don't. I mean, I think most of us would prefer not to have that happen in Oro Valley. I know we're changing some Airbnb laws. But, yeah, the one thing that I thought is, why don't we consider having some type of zoning for fourplexes, or how does that go about? Or maybe there's just no demand whatsoever. But I don't know where that comes through the thought process of going through this plan.
So, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, so I think that's definitely something that we want to get the data first. Get the count of the units, but also those characteristics of the units, and also understand the needs of our current and future residents, because that could possibly be a recommendation from the housing study, is maybe that is a housing type that we should look into our zoning regulations or our, you know, general plan policies to accommodate more. So I think that is something that we'd want to wait, though, first for the data before we decide to make those create those actions, but appreciate the feedback.
Okay. Councilmember Solomon, did you questions?
No, obviously the information would be very good to have. The question is, how will the town use it? I can already tell you what the survey is going to be when you ask people if they want more housing in this community. I've heard it for the last 30 years at every public meeting. The other thing is there any stomach to rezone commercial property to residential property? That's the same thing that we've heard year after year after year. So obviously this is great information. It'd be good information to know. I just hope that when we have it, we actually utilize it. And that's my only concern, is are we wasting our time, because it's never ever going, the end result will never happen. Everybody that moves here doesn't want anyone else to move here. We just heard that 2 weeks ago. And every project that comes, and we know we have an excessive commercial property, and they come and say, let's rezone it to residential because we have a shortage of residential, and basically, the public and many times the council says no. So if we're going to spend all this time and effort, we need to ask ourselves, are we actually going to listen and act on the results, or we've already made our decision before we make the study?
Councilmember Jones-Ivey, I'm just going to check in with you. Did you? Okay, Vice Mayor Barrett.
Okay, thanks. Can you go to the slide that says response to commission and council feedback?
Yes.
Okay. So this is where I'm just going to make abundantly clear. When this is presented to council and commission, I'd like to see a survey as part of this when it's presented to council and commission. Because here we have, consider various code and process changes to increase housing production. And then under next steps, after that, we say present findings to public and gather input from residents on preferences for housing types and locations. That's backwards. We shouldn't be considering various code and process changes to increase housing production until we have first as representatives of the people of Oro Valley, asked the people of Oro Valley and gotten that data from them. And so I mean, that's my feeling on it. I've expressed it before. And I just kind of feel like this, you know, this slide kind of shows how those steps are flipped. And it's not enough to wait for, oh, we're going to have a next general plan. When this is presented, there's no reason that there couldn't be a statistically valid survey as part of that, because that will really help us to consider various code and process changes and balance different competing interests and have more recognition. Like Councilmember Solomon stated, we have people that come in and speak on certain items. Then sometimes there's a perception that that represents only a fraction of people, maybe the people who are interested in that particular item. And that's where we don't have that data very clearly available to us, because we're hearing from the people who are concerned about a certain thing. So getting that broader perspective, I think, is really valuable before we move on code and process changes.
And Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, if I can clarify, I want to make it very clear that within the, and I'm going to go back to this slide, within those recommendations, there's no action being asked to take, and so being taken, excuse me. So with the feedback from the commission, similar to Councilmember Nicholson's comment, they had a lot of great ideas of, well, we should do this with housing. Why don't we have housing along transit lines? And similar to our response is, let's let the data play out first and see what findings come about. And that's where, when we present the data, which we are eager to get to you as soon as possible, because we do understand the need for it. So that's where we want to do this fact gathering and data gathering, get it to you within the next year. And there will be recommendations in there, but no action being asked, because we do then want to vet those with the community. Here's what the data shows. Here's what the findings are. So the ideas that were generated during the commission discussion, we don't want to put in the scope, because we do want to see what the data shows and get the community's input first.
Right, but the data should include the data about our community.
Sure. And I don't.
In my experience, Vice Mayor of the town, even a statistically valid phone survey isn't enough on a big issue like this. I think that is it's a start, a very important start, but I think it's also doing workshops, it's forums, providing education about these facts and having discussion. I think it is getting out to different groups, to different HOAs, chambers of commerce, incorporating all of those folks. And that type of effort happens with a general plan. A statistically valid survey, when it's done, every one I've done for the town is there's one group that's fascinated and awed by it, and another group that discounts everything that's in it because the questions weren't asked just right. So I think a broader base of data is needed, and we agree there should be no action until it's been vetted by the community. And again, we're trying to promote actually a more intensive community effort that goes beyond and includes a phone survey.
I understand, but it is a start, and I can see that it's not something that you want to include in the housing study. It is something I want to be included in the housing study, and I feel that it's important to get that start of our residents' input before we begin making recommendations. So, I mean, that's my perspective on it. I guess we'll have to agree to disagree. I don't know if the other council members have weigh in on that, but I just feel like consider various code and process changes to increase housing production should not come in front of present findings to public or gather input to residents. And a statistically valid survey on this issue as part of this scope of the project does not replace the output that's going to take place during the general plan. It only supplements it. So, thanks.
Councilmember Green.
I think if I were pushing the rewind button, I would have gone back and thought about this study before we had 300 vet school students, before we doubled the size of Roach, before we had the Leonardo. And I think that that's got to be a part of the future. What is the business community? We got the right guy to look at that. But I think that should be part of the study as well. I followed many, many a vet student driving from downtown up here to go to vet school when they could be renting up here. That's crazy.
Councilmember Nicholson, did I see your hand?
Yeah, I was just going to say I agree with Melanie, but also, too, based on your point, Mel, like, I'm a controller. I work at the airport. My neighbor is Raytheon. He goes to Raytheon. So, like, we drive all the way down there. I'm not going to propose to build another, you know, Tucson International Airport in Oro Valley. But so, yeah, I mean, sometimes you do have to drive to go to the work you need to be. But, you know, I think our residents have spoken what they kind of want via the election process and democratic process. And I agree with Melanie that it's good to hear from the residents to find out what they think. Yes, there are sometimes, like, residents don't want a big five-story house right behind their house, right? Sometimes you have to make some things for the betterment of the community. There is some type of compromise that you have to go some middle ground. But I do personally want to hear what the residents think. But we also know information that sometimes the residents don't know because we're involved in it all the time. So there are some things you have to consider. Like, you do need some housing for Roche. So I think there is a middle common ground, but I don't think it's a bad thing to hear from the residents. It's not just because they hear from the residents we're going to agree and do exactly what they want, just on the other flip side of the coin. But I think it is good information to have, and I think our process, our governmental process, we are here as representative on behalf of them, and we are representative of them. And I think I agree with Melanie that I think it would be good to have that information.
I wouldn't argue with that, but I'm just suggesting that we look at the horizon.
I have a question or two.
I just wanted to add, just, you know, that and we'll certainly leave alone after this point, that the thought that I didn't articulate very well is that having the baseline inventory facts helps the community have an informed discussion. So doing a survey and whatnot in advance of those facts being put out there for dialogue, constructive dialogue, that I think that makes it challenging and perhaps not as informative as we would expect, because many times we hear it at neighborhood meetings over and over again. Folks start many times with an assumption about housing that's not factually correct.
Mayor,
so it's creating a baseline.
I'm sorry, Mayor. I think Councilmember Bowen, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay,
it's simply due to the layout of this magnificent room that you often don't see me, even though I'm two people away. Regarding surveys, I support what the Vice Mayor says. I'm doing a survey every day in this job. I look at myself as a representative of residents. Why do I take that role so seriously? Because residents don't have anyone else to represent them, in my view, other than council members. Business interests have people to represent them. Everyone else does, but residents. And I take exception to some comments I've heard that people like me who moved here in 2015 just want to pull the drawbridge up, and that's our only concern. My number one concern, and you'll see it through my actions at every single meeting, is I dig deep into the finances, because everything comes down to finances. And what I see here are very healthy finances. Anytime we have a piece of land, I believe we have three choices: residential, commercial, or open space. I assign responsibility to the landowner to move at the appropriate time when the market tells them they're going to have success in Oro Valley. I came to council meetings for many years, and I saw everything approved. And we have a huge inventory of entitlements right now. I have no compassion for the landowners that didn't see the lay of the land at that time and didn't move and strike when the iron was hot. Now people are more informed, they're better organized, and I'm extremely grateful for that. I lived in Orange County for 50 years. I saw it from orange groves to a concrete jungle. And when I came to Oro Valley, I saw the lack of inevitability of that always happening everywhere you live. So I just wanted to make the point in public, finances is number one. Having enough money to pay for the police, repair the roads, keep the infrastructure in good shape is number one to me. And every time we develop, it doesn't just come with added revenue, it comes with costs. And we should never forget that. I, once again, to recap, I see a very intelligent population here asking a lot of good questions, a very well-educated population, a very engaged population. And the insinuation that we're so short-sighted that we would turn down development to cause our city to go bankrupt and have some of the problems that you see in Tucson, I think it's just plain incorrect. Thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. What I would like to see as a part of the survey is those people that work in this community, because I know we've had requests from Oral Valley Hospital, the vet school, to provide housing, and I would like to get that input from those people in the community also. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Sims, I provided written feedback, but there's a few things I want to follow up with. And my intent here isn't to put you on the spot, so if you don't. But there were a few phrases in the scope for the housing study that I realize this is going out to contractors, but for the layperson, there were some phrases that I didn't quite understand what was meant. And one is elimination of substandard dwelling conditions.
Sure. So, Mr. Mayor, that stems from the state requirement for the next general plan. So, again, trying to use this study, two birds, one stone. And what it means by substandard dwelling units, those are factors that are primarily focused on public health and safety. So it's looking at, there's a range of factors, but just to name a few, it's property maintenance, any open code violations, also if there's dwelling units with lacking amenities, such as plumbing and heating or air conditioning. And so that is derived from a statewide requirement, and in efforts to meet it for the next general plan, it will be included in the study as part of that inventory.
Yeah, that was going to be my, so that's part of that inventory, is identifying these substandard dwelling conditions that may exist in our community that we may not be aware of.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. So there were some substandard dwelling conditions in my house. There wasn't felt or flashing on a good part of the roof. But anyway, it was built in 1994 before our inspector, so it was the county, just to be clear here. It's not a jab to our improvement of housing quality. What does that refer to?
Sure. So that is also derived from the state law requirement for the next general plan. So it requires that we have, if we have a need for it, that we have goals and policies in place to help improve quality of housing. So that's actually taking those substandard housing and then looking at the solution for that. So other cities, such as the city of Scottsdale and their general plan, they have policies related to rehab programs, especially for the elderly, to help them with their property maintenance or upkeep of homes. Also looking at different ways of just improvements, or even maybe it's building code updates to make sure we have the most recent update in our town, which we do, but actions related to that to make sure the quality of housing remains high quality in Oro Valley.
I'm incredibly impressed with your responses.
Oh, thank you.
How about provision of adequate sites for housing?
Sure. So that is also a state law requirement, and it looks at mostly the goals and policies related to the types of housing we want in Oro Valley, but also looking at the land use map and where is certain housing products, where are they best located to create that complete community. So in our current general plan, we have a policy, for instance, of having diverse housing types for current and future residents. That is a policy that would fit under that state law requirement should it move forward after going through the public outreach process.
Thank you. And our previous community economic development director would give numbers that we had 13,000 people that left Oro Valley each day for employment and about 9,000 that came into Oro Valley for employment. I suspect those numbers have changed only because talking with a Raytheon manager, and I talked with him about having an office here in Oro Valley, and he said, Mayor, I've got about 5,000 offices in Oro Valley since the pandemic, but have the numbers changed?
Mayor, members of council, thank you for the question. I'm anxious to see those numbers as well, because you're right, you've referenced the 13,000, 8,000 coming back and forth. It would be good to see what those numbers are, and that does play into that housing, the discussion about affordable and accessible housing for workers in Oro Valley. But I haven't seen the numbers yet either. The delays have, as Mr. Vela had mentioned, have been very tough, just waiting for that data.
Thank you. Ms. Sims, how about how will the larger region, or will it be taken into consideration as part of this study?
So, Mr. Mayor, yes, we do want to take the context of the region and housing, and both housing and economic development into consideration, because as you just mentioned, there's workforce traveling from all over to come here, and then our residents are also traveling outside of the town. So we do want to take in the regional context, especially if there's a major employer going in, you know, just south of us. We want to know about that, or we want to factor that in. Same with housing. Tucson, let's see, most of the jurisdictions around us have either completed a housing study or are in the midst of doing so. Housing is a statewide conversation right now. So we want to take all of that into consideration. Similar to Sedona, you know, they did it as a regional approach, because you do want to know how many houses are around and nearby going to be built, because that will also impact the need that the town will have.
Thanks. And just for the record, I in my comments to staff, I did write, I think this section must include, it was talking about factors in housing demand. I think this section must include analysis about the sentiment of Oro Valley residents in regards to housing type, location, et cetera. Yeah. And I'll just add that when I read the general plan, I don't get a sense from our community that they don't want development. When you look at the 12 guidelines, you know, it certainly speaks to development. I think individuals in our community recognize that change is going to occur. I've been here 26 years. That's been the one constant. It's just how that change occurs, right? And so I certainly value the input that our residents have, because many of them have come from other parts of the country, and they've experienced both the, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly, and they want to bring the good to Oro Valley. So I think it's important to check in with them to get that input. So thanks. Any other questions, comments? Councilmember Bowen?
Just a quick one, because I had researched this myself. The number of people coming into and out of Oro Valley is data provided by the site on the map. It's not U.S. Census data necessarily. On the map is a private service that updates every year. And I believe one of our consultants that did a study for us mentioned that they use On the Map. And I would suggest that staff look, if you're curious about the most current data, to look that up. I don't think it's going to come you straight out of the census, but rather acknowledge that there are people that are already collecting that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Sims, Mr. Vela, we certainly appreciate your responding to council's questions and input this evening. Of course, no action is taken on this item. It was a study session agenda item. So I'm going to adjourn the study session, reconvene the regular session, and I'm going to make a motion that we go into the first executive session with the town manager, legal services director, town attorney, and the town clerk. Joining council in the second executive session will be the town manager, town attorney, and the town clerk. Following those executive sessions, we'll resume the regular session. I'm sorry, that was a motion.
Seconded
by Councilmember Jones-Ivy. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go into executive session. Thank you. We're going to resume the regular session. Mr. Standish, regular agenda item one.
For direction to the town manager and or necessary staff as discussed in executive session to approve or deny a settlement of Marsh v. Oro Valley claim.
I move to approve the settlement of the Marsh versus Oro Valley claim in the amount of $37,500.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Solomon. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Mr. Standish, item two of regular agenda.
For direction to the town attorney and or necessary staff as discussed in executive session regarding the town manager's annual performance review.
I move to proceed as directed in executive session.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. I move to adjourn.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Ayes have it, 7-0. Good night, everyone.